Lake Effect continues now on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Between the rush of Thanksgiving and now the upcoming holidays, not to mention all of the impeachment hearings and news to pay attention to, we can understand if perhaps you haven't gotten as far on your reading list as you might have planned. But even if there's books left to read, or perhaps you're looking for some new suggestions in the coming weeks, Boswell Book Company's Daniel Golden is here to offer some suggestions. Daniel, welcome back to Lake Effect.
It's a pleasure to be here with you, Audrey.
So, best of books for 2019. Before we get into your personal favorites and lists, what were some trends? I mean, I know books, of course, span genres, but were there any trends for 2019 that showed a theme of any sort?
Well, the first thing that we're noticing is, at least so far, there haven't been huge breakouts like there were in 2018. We're not seeing an educated, we're not seeing Michelle Obama's Becoming is not on the horizon, and we're not seeing a Where the Crawdads Sing, which was not only a breakout from 2018, but actually, according to BookScan, at least as of a few weeks ago, was the best-selling novel of 2019, even though it came out last August. So a lot of books are fighting for attention, not necessarily getting as much bandwidth as probably they need to break out.
And is that in part because of what publishers are trying to produce in trends?
Publishers are always chasing trends. The truth is that often the things that break out break trends. They don't follow trends. And so I think they're trying really hard, but they're not seeing the results. I mean, we're seeing something that mimics the movie world, a lot of sequels. So sequels are the bread and butter of fantasy, of YA, and of mysteries. But you don't see them so much in literary fiction. I mean, there are the Rabbit books and a few other famous. Most often they work more as companions than direct sequels. But this fall had three major sequels. We had The Testaments from Margaret Atwood, the sequel to Handmaid's Tale. We had Olive Again, the sequel to Olive Kitteridge, and from Elizabeth Strout. And we had Find Me, the sequel to Andre Aciman's Call Me By Your Name. All three of them hit the bestseller list, two in a major way. And that bodes for me in the future more of that.
Okay. And with books, do you think since the literary sequel is kind of gaining traction here, are books overall just trending at a smaller level? You mentioned there's a lot of competition, there's a lot of things being released, but I feel like that's what our attention span is like across the board, beyond what we're reading, what we're watching, all of these platforms competing for our attention.
Oh, there's no question that things like obviously news, but also podcasts are cutting into the time. Definitely people are listening to books as audio downloads or streaming, but they're also listening to other things that aren't books. And they're also following, you know, videos and all kinds of things. There is only so much time in the day. And there's always been something playing on people's time. But I will note that when we do have a podcaster who writes a book, we get a big turnout if the podcast is popular. So I think one of the things I noticed is publishers are chasing podcasts, for example, and making – I haven't seen an explosive book come out of it, but sometimes in my not able to know everything that's going on, because so much is going on, we've had this amazing explosion of information, I'll only find out much after a book is successful that it's a podcast driving the sales.
Of course. So lots of multi-platform.
A lot of multi-platform,
yeah,
things.
Competition.
Right.
So now let's get into your best of picks for 2019. One book that we have that we can have as our regional focus is Milwaukee Noir.
Yes, we're always looking for a good regional book. Last year we had a big book from John Gerda on water. There was a new edition of Making Milwaukee. We've had a number of titles of picture books. Last year we had Lulu and Rocky in Milwaukee. This year it's been a bit of a struggle. People are certainly publishing them, but a lot of them are coming in at the last second. So we just got the announcement on Sheldon Lubar's memoir yesterday, and there's a big Milwaukee rock and roll book that still hasn't arrived yet. But Milwaukee Noir is. So when I looked at our numbers, we have sold hundreds of copies of this book. It's an anthology. of mystery noir stories from local writers, each set in a different neighborhood or suburb of Milwaukee. It is a large series from Akashic, which is a wonderful independent publisher that has published this series for cities and countries and some states worldwide. It always has a strong international element and a strong multicultural element. And a lot of the stories have a bit of a social justice narrative. So there's, how should one say, a lot of revenge fantasy involved in these books. But we're seeing this as a platform for authors to break out. Already, one of the contributors, Christina Clancy, has a huge book scheduled for next June called The Second Home. And it is not a mystery, but one of the things that was interesting about Tim Hennessy's collection is there are some folks that we know from the mystery world, like Nick Petrie, and then there are other people like Jane Hamilton and Larry Watson that we don't automatically think of noir, their noir personalities, but I guess they have some hidden noir in them.
Yeah, a little fun change of scenery for them. With setting the scene and kind of dipping our toes into different things, a lot of the times we read books to escape. So what's the big choice for escapism this year?
Well, one of the things that's interesting to me is that so many of the literary novels that are popular this year, The Water Dancer by Ta-Nehisi Coates, Black Leopard, Red Wolf by Marlon James, The Starless Sea by Erin Morgenstern have speculative angles to them. We're also seeing Tomi Adeyemi, her sequel to her new book, Children of Virtue, Children of Blood and Bone, and the sequel is Children of Virtue and Something. And fill in the blank.
Sure.
Which is a YA that crossed over to adults and has African mythological elements woven in. Romance is on the ascendance. The new romances have cartoon covers, so that's how you know what they are. They're diverse, they're disability friendly, they're LGBT friendly, and the women have agency. One of my favorite books is a crossover romance. It's like it's published by Berkeley that does a lot of romance. We're not really sure. The author's name is Abby Waxman. We're not really sure if she thinks she writes romance, but there's definitely a strong romance in it. The book's called The Bookish Life of Nina Hill. Of course, I was drawn to it because it's set in a bookstore. And
need
I do
to
love
have
bookstore
that.
Novels.
That's right.
As do many of my customers. It's a woman in a struggling bookstore in Los Angeles. So there's a couple of elements to the story. She's in this struggling bookstore, so she's putting on book clubs and author events and dealing with customers as they come in, some of whom are very nice and some of whom are mean, just like in real life. She also plays competitive trivia, which is where she meets someone who might be a love interest. But more than that, she's been on her own for many years. She was raised by her mom. Her father waived paternity. There was a fling, so to speak. And her mother's in Australia now. So she's really living on her own solo. But in the mail comes a note that she's in the will of her father who died. And lo and behold, he has multiple wives, multiple kids, multiple grandkids. And now she's in the middle of this huge family, some of whom are thrilled to see her and some of whom are not thrilled to see her. There's a lot of money there, but there's not enough money for everyone.
Sure.
And of course, she needs the money.
Yes. And how about The Yellow House? That has been getting a lot of attention.
It has been getting a lot of attention. One of the things is, as our buyers, Jason and Amy, look at bestseller lists, and we want to see where's the consensus? And one of the problems that I'm having in terms of fiction is that the picks are all over the place. There's not a lot of obvious picks. And unlike years past, where a major book came out and there was like a top-down, this is important, and basically, a lot of critics followed suit. Critics also have their own agency. There's a lot more diversity. They're working for smaller organs. You know, you have a lot of websites picking books, and they're often freelancers, and so they pick the books they like, and so they don't always overlap. In the nonfiction side, there seems to be a little more consensus that The Yellow Book might be the book. I would like to pitch it as
The Yellow House.
The Yellow House, yes. The yellow, and it's not even a yellow book. So, oh my God. It's like a cross between, it's an educated, in that it's a very strong memoir, but it's also an evicted. It's got a social justice angle. It takes place in New Orleans, and the history of her mom's house. She was the 12th kid, the father died while her mom was pregnant, and all the problems they have in terms of race and class and inequality in New Orleans as a result of that. She has the writing credentials. The writing's beautiful. National Book Award winner, top 10 of the New York Times and the Washington Post. And I will, I expect to continue to see that. I'll definitely, if I don't read it this year, I'll be doing it for, I like to save some of these prize winners for our in-store book club. So, because I like to make sure we read everything. So we'll be reading that. We'll be reading Trust Exercise, the Susan Choi, the National Book Award winner. We'll be reading the Booker Prize winner, Girl, Woman, Other by Bernardine Evaristo. I should make that clear. We'll be reading one of the two Booker Prize winners because there was a tie.
That happened a lot this past year.
There was a lot of ties. This is the first tie for the Booker Prize in a long time. I remember because The English Patient by Michael Ondaatje was actually in a tie for the Booker winner. The other book was Testaments by Margaret Atwood. There was some controversy over that because did this mean that Bernardine Evaristo was not getting a full Booker Prize winner? And, you know, there is this thing in terms of awards sometimes, less than there used to be, much like the Oscars, a body of work. Like, you're awarded for one book, but it's because you did good stuff in the past.
You've been waiting long enough.
Right.
There you go.
Yeah. Really, Margaret Atwood deserves the Booker finally, except that she won it twice already.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not really for a sequel. And that got very nice reviews, but they certainly weren't the best reviews of the year.
Right.
So I don't know. Mm-hmm. People do love her, and the book's good. But I'm more interested in reading Girl, Woman, Other, which is she's an Anglo-Nigerian woman who's written a number of books. This is about a group of women in London, and it takes place over one day, or as the copy says, or is it 100 years? So really looking forward to that. I think there's a really great, American and British and Nigerian, there's a lot of really great Nigerian writers popping up. I just read a book coming out in February by a wonderful author. It's just terrific. I mean, it's a very large country, so there's a lot of people to choose from to have great writers.
Right. And speaking of books coming from other countries, you mentioned this is your top pick for the year. It's called We're All in This Together.
I know. It's such a strange year for me. I have an underdog thing. And so it seems like every other year my book is an underdog. 2 years ago, my top book, Lonesome Lies Before Us, by Don Lee, never went into paperback even. So I just cry. I still cry. I have one copy in my rec shelf that I kind of look at fondly and think, who's going to buy that copy from me?
Yeah.
So We're All in This Together didn't come out in the United States. It was actually imported from Canada. They didn't sell the rights. McLellan and Stewart is a small imprint that is actually owned by a multinational, Penguin Random House, but they have no marketing here. It's about feuding sisters in Thunder Bay, Ontario. One of them has left the small town, Wisconsin-like town behind for a life in the big city of Toronto, and the other one has decided to stay behind and take care of the family. Only the woman who moved away is not having much of a life, and the woman who stayed behind is not really taking care of very many people. So she's kind of not paying attention. One of the daughters is chasing sharks in Lake Superior, and the mother has just gone over the falls in a barrel. She is the best character because the secret. The book is a fractured family, laugh out loud, funny, where'd you go, Bernadette kind of story. But there's so much heart in it, too. It's so sad. And as the story goes on, the sisters have to find a way to come to terms with each other. But more than that, we as the reader are trying to figure out what's in the mom's past that she keeps running away, barrel or otherwise.
Okay.
So loved it. I passed it around to people. I've gotten so much great feedback. I just this morning, somebody said when they were looking at my table, they go, oh, I read this because you told me to, and I loved it. I've had book clubs come back to me and tell me that when I tried to get them to read it, they're like, oh, we've already passed it around. We all read it.
There we go.
So my big pitch, my last pitch.
Well, and let's move to our younger readers or those who are being read to. We have these great books, Peekahoo and Peekahoo 2, but it's technically a book, but they just made the smart move of changing the physical geography of a pop-up book. Can you describe it for
us?
Yes,
I love these books, and everybody else does too, because they're triangular. They're lift the flap. Not an unusual premise. I mean, what does the cow say? I think you've read that book before.
Sure.
But really, if you boil it down, you've read every book before because there's not that many new ideas. But this book has a new idea in that you lift the flaps and it's triangular. They're just adorable. There's two of them. This is a wonderful European packager. I will not pronounce the name of the author right. Elsa Mrawitz, something like that. But doesn't matter. If you say to a bookseller or a librarian or a website or one of those devices, peek-a-hoo, it should show up.
Yeah.
So cute.
Yeah, and great colors, great illustrations, of course, that all kids' books should be filled with. Another great book full of beautiful imagery is this massive tabletop planetarium book.
We love these kind of books. These are the kind of books, one of the things that these two books have in common is they tend to do well in bookstores for two reasons. Board books, you don't carry too many board books in a library because the kids eat them. And in terms of these oversized books, they're really hard to shelve. But our fourth quarter is filled with these. They're also both often European packages. So the book that I am talking about is Planetarium, another European package. Raman Prinya, I think, is the name of the author. And what it is, it's like a museum in a book. So you have these beautiful spreads of everything you would see in a planetarium, and then wonderful text. So a lot of these nonfiction oversized books are actually 8 and up, whereas you think of picture books as being about when you stop biting, so what is that, 2 or 3 up until about 8. And in fact, a lot of children's books are taking word count out because kids are moving away from picture books earlier into early readers. But this seems to be the exception. These sort of nonfiction, we've had books about the ocean. We've had books with tons of books about animals and birds. I just love them. And there's so much text that the kid can read up. So when they're young, they can look at the pictures. And as they grow, they can learn more and more.
Definitely a good thing. And hopefully some of all of our books that we've touched upon can attract people from those young readers all the way to adults looking for that escapism or anything else.
Well, it's true. I think a lot of kids' books are bought by adults. And of course, there's a lot of smart kids out there that are reading adult books. So we're always looking for a kind of a book that we think, like especially for teens, like if they're not interested in the romance or fantasy that dominates a lot of YA fiction, they wind up reading adult stuff and you just look for the things that you think that they'll like, with the right characters and things.
Right. Well, hopefully some listeners out there will find the right stuff within this Best of 2019 list. Daniel, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Daniel Golden is the proprietor of Milwaukee's Boswell Book Company. You can find his entire list of book-giving suggestions, including some that didn't make it to the air, at wuwm.com.